Labor Day weekend, as it's known around America. And tomorrow, actually to the day, will be the 140th anniversary of the Labor Day parade, the first Labor Day weekend parade. It's kind of interesting because it's September 5th, 1882. They gathered for a Labor Day parade, and it almost turned into a disaster because they gathered around and nobody had a band. So they felt like they couldn't march without a band. And then at 10 o'clock in the morning, a group came over from New Jersey, and they had a band. It was a jeweler's group, and they had a band. So, now we got a parade. And they began marching. And everybody was actually prepared for riots, but it all worked out okay. Labor Day weekend is a time, and Labor Day specifically, is a time to celebrate the American worker, contributions that they make to our society and our prosperity and our nation. Labor Day is usually celebrated with a backyard grill out. Anybody doing that tomorrow? Yes, we are. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe jump in the pool or jump in the lake, maybe camping somewhere, watermelon, steak. Americans really live by a phrase, work hard, play hard. This is how our society goes. We work hard, we love to work hard, and then we play hard. And we work to, as it seems, to get stuff, to collect a paycheck, collect toys, treasures, and make a splash on vacation, and then we repeat, and then we work, and then we eat, and we sleep to collect a paycheck, to get stuff, toys, treasures, make a splash on vacation, and then we work hard to play hard and then repeat. That's how our society kind of goes. And yet, Jesus says he's returning to make all things new. He's returning. He's coming again. And the question that we have to think about is, what is the purpose of us working if Jesus is returning? Why do we work? What's the purpose for work? Now, we tend to get our priorities a little bit skewed as Americans. If we just go through this cycle, work hard to play hard, work hard to collect stuff, get a paycheck, go through the cycle, repeat. Is there more to work? What is it? And what is our purpose for working if Jesus is returning? You see, it's Jesus said he was coming back throughout the Gospels. He's repeating this phrase, I'm returning. We've been in this series in Matthew 24, Matthew 25, in our longer series on the parables. And this is talking about Jesus' return in great power and glory. But also, after he ascended into heaven, the angelic messenger sent by God in Acts chapter 1, verse 9 through 11. They talk about his return. Here's that passage on the screen now, Acts chapter 1, 9 through 11. It will appear in just a moment. And after he had said these things, he was lifted up while they were looking on, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And as they were gazing intently into the sky while he was going, behold, two men in white clothing stood beside them. And these men say something. They also said, men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into the sky? This Jesus who has been taken up from you into heaven will come in just the same way as you have watched him go into heaven. And so Jesus was sent by the Father to accomplish the mission of the Father, to rescue and save sinners. He died in our place. On the third day, he rose from the dead after appearing in front of more than 500 witnesses, as recorded in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. He ascends into heaven, and then the angels say to the disciples, just the same way as he went up, he's coming again. So he's returning, but we're here on earth waiting. So what's the purpose of our working if he is returning? You might have heard some people say, well, it's all going to burn anyway. You heard that before. There's some theological issues with that I might have. But what about right now, if we're waiting on heaven and the hope of his return, how do we work and what's the purpose in our work? And this leads us to Matthew chapter 25, to the last in this three set parables, in Matthew 24, Matthew 25 is the Olivet Discourse, this teaching that Jesus gave his disciples on the Mount of Olives. And in Matthew 25, verses 14 and following, we're going to find what Jesus says about the way the mysterious way the kingdom of heaven operates today, right now, in the church age. So right now we are in between. We're in the somewhere between, as one Christian poet said, that Jesus has ascended into heaven and we await the first stage of his return, which is the rapture of the church. And so what do we do when we're waiting? Well, in the first parable, which we looked at two Sundays ago, it was wait with your eyes on heaven, wait with preparedness. And then the second parable teaches us to watch with readiness and preparedness, for our King is coming. How do we live right now in light of that return? But then it's going to move to work, because God has called us to work and to work with a purpose. And the shocking reality, even in the Garden of Eden, is that Adam and Eve worked in the garden. So work is a part of paradise. And so we will work, I believe, even in the new heavens and the new earth, to the glory of God. Not dealing with blisters anymore, but we will work. And we are called to work, created to work right now. But how does that work out right now? So in Matthew chapter 25, verse 14, are you there? We're going to see three truths about work and how this fits into our hope of heaven, which is the theme of these two chapters. And then how does this today connect right now? Because you have your feet on the ground or your boots on the ground. You're working tomorrow, well, Labor Day. Most of you probably will have the day off. Some of you won't, right? We'll try to save a hamburger for you or watermelon for later. But on Tuesday, we're all back to it. We're working. And so in Matthew chapter 25, verse 14, it says this. Jesus says, for it is, and that little phrase there is important. It connects back to verse 1 of the same chapter where he says, then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to. That is the mysterious, the not fully understood way the kingdom of heaven works right now in the somewhere between the ascension and the rapture, okay? And so it says, for it is, the kingdom of heaven, it works like this. Just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves or servants and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. Now this man, we're going to see, it develops that he is their master, and Jesus is really the man, and he's going to be away for a long time. And the first thing that this man does with his servants is that he entrusts a huge amount of money. A huge amount of money. So truth number one is that God's resources are entrusted to us, but get this, not owned by us. Everything that we have is ultimately not owned by us. It's entrusted to us by God. If we are his children and we are his servants, then everything that we have is owned by him. Do you agree with that? And so then what he wants should govern how we work with what he's given us, with what he's entrusted to us. This is how God's resources work. But this man is full of benevolence, full of overflowing generous grace to his servants, because a talent was the largest unit, the largest denomination of money at this time. 1 talent weighed 58 to 80 pounds, and it was silver or gold, depending on where you were living and working. 1 talent was worth 6,000 denarius or denarii. 1 denarii or 1 denarius was 1 day's wages. So 1 day's work, you get 1 denarius. 6,000 is equivalent to about 20 years. If you work about 300 days a year, that's about 20 years of labor. So it is the bulk of an adult person's working life at this time. Of course, the mortality rate, people died usually between 40 and 50 years old at this time. So the bulk of their adult life, entire life's work essentially was 1 talent. It was worth about $1 million. So $50,000 a year times 20, that's $1 million. Huge amount of money. And so to one servant, he gives 5 talents. That's the equivalent of $5 million or maybe more. And then to the next one, 2 million. And the next one, 1 million. So these are not small amounts of money. God's resources entrusted to these servants. Think of this, how big this is. And so he gives them according to their ability, according each one to his own ability, and he went on his journey, okay? And God has given each of us, in this general sense, each according to our ability, time, talent, treasure, spiritual gifts. Now, there, you have to apply this in a general way, and people have tried to apply this in terms of, well, it's the content of the gospel, or if it's spiritual gifts, or it's your time, talent, or treasure. In general, your life is what God has given you. If you are his servant, you are owned by him, and your life is then to be governed and according to his agenda. So everything that we have, everything that he's entrusted to us, is according to his will if we're his. And so we walk in his way, and it's entrusted to us. So now, verse 16, look with me, Matthew chapter 25, verse 16. It says, immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them, invested it, used those resources, and gained 5 more talents. So $5 million basically was entrusted to him by the man, and he goes and uses it wisely. He invests it diligently, works it, puts it to use, and doubles the money. Now he has $10 million, 5 more talents. In the same manner, in the same way, immediately. Notice this is immediately. No hesitation, no holding back. My master's entrusted this to me. I'm going to put it to use. I'm going to put it to work. The one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. And so traded with it, invested with it, worked, put it to use. But here's the twist, verse 18. But he who received the 1 talent, which was still a huge amount of money, dug a hole and in the ground and put the 1 talent away, the 1 talent away and dug a hole and in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. That long time, just like, remember the previous parable from last Sunday? You can hold up on that one for a moment, Brian. So the last parable was the 10 virgins, the 5 foolish, the 5 wise, and there was a delay, a long delay. Remember, they were waiting and watching for the bridegroom to come. It's the same idea here. There's a long delay. They're waiting and waiting for their master to return. Long journey. He's gone for a long time. The master of those slaves, he came, and he settled accounts with them. And, of course, in this somewhere between is the question, what are you doing with what the master's given to you? Are you utilizing it? So now point number 2, Brian. God's resources are entrusted to us to be utilized by us, right? They are entrusted to us. Anything that you have, your spiritual gifts, your time, your talent, your treasure, what he's done in you, your experiences, your family, your opportunity, all of that is entrusted to you for a reason by your creator, by your master Jesus, to be utilized, not to sit on it or hide it, or even more insidiously, we'll find something deeper in this other servant. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves, or can be translated servant, came and settled accounts with them. Verse 20, the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me, the equivalent of $5 million or 30,000 denarii. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. And his master replies in the exact same way. Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. You see, Jesus ultimately is the master who is returning, and right now we're waiting and we're watching for his return, but right now he has us on his mission, and we're to live out what he's entrusted to us, utilizing it for his glory, for his mission, for his purpose. and he is overflowing in grace towards us. He's given us so much, and overflowing. And if we shelter it, hide it away, well, we're going to find out about how that works out. But if we utilize it, we experience joy right now and ultimately the joy of our master at his return, overflowing, because we believed in who he is. Don't miss that. We know rightly about this master, and we've put our trust in him, and we believe he's still coming again. Now let's take a look at that third servant. Verse 24, and the one also who had received the one talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man. Another way to translate that, maybe in your text, harsh person, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. This servant has missed the heart of the master. He doesn't know how this master is not hard and harsh. It's a master full of grace and benevolence. See, our king is not a harsh taskmaster, but a benevolent king who rules over us in love and mercy, overflowing with grace. How do we respond to him? And this servant has maybe even a twist. One commentator said, if he hid it in the ground, he doesn't have to report to the bank who it belongs to. So he's thinking, if the master never returns, dies somewhere, I get word of that, well, I can just take it out of the ground and then I have it for myself. He doesn't know the master's heart. In fact, he doesn't know the master. This ties back to the tail end of that previous parable. Look at verse 12 of chapter 25, same chapter, verse 12. The five unwise, foolish virgins are not prepared, ready for the bridegroom's return. And he said to them in verse 12, truly, I say to you, I do not know you. And here, this servant, he doesn't know the heart of the master. Here's how it plays out. Look at verse 26. But his master answered and said to him, you wicked, lazy slave, you didn't utilize what I entrusted you. You knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. You did nothing with it. You sat on it. But you also didn't really know and believe and trust that I was returning. So God's resources are entrusted to us to be utilized by us. God's resources are entrusted to us, not owned by us. The third truth, that God's resources are wasted on us when they're not utilized by us. Now think of this in a broad, general sense. Anything that God has entrusted to you is part of this. If the shoe fits, wear it, right? What are you doing with what God has given to you? Kids, you received a little coin because it's Family Sunday at Mayfair Bible Church. Just grab that penny that I gave you. You're probably thinking, a penny? I mean, a penny. I know it's not $1 million. Unless maybe, I don't know, maybe one of them I handed out and it was from 1816 and I didn't know. What has God given to you? Now everybody think about, what has God entrusted to you? Has he entrusted financial resources? Has he entrusted skill and expertise? Has he entrusted an ability to work with people? Has he entrusted you with language ability? Has he entrusted you with a reputation in the community? Has he entrusted you with a background in a particular type of skill, workplace, environment? What has God entrusted to you, and how are you going to utilize what he has entrusted to you? And utilize it for his glory's sake, for the gospel's sake, not for just yourself. There's another little twist here. When this man says, I was afraid and went away and I hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. He was also taking the safest route. Because in rabbinic literature back then in the first century, burying something was considered the safest thing to do. If you had a treasure, bury it in the ground. Just don't forget where you put it. So you have a map with an X on it, right? So he took the safest route. And what God is calling his servants to is not living safely. Faithfulness is not living safely, but living boldly, courageously, wisely. These two other servants who acted faithfully and wisely, they immediately, no hesitation, put the what was entrusted to them to use. They utilized it. And think about that. Are you going with the safe route? What is safety? Or are you and I living boldly, wisely, courageously with what God has given to us? Where is God calling you to go? Where is God calling you to serve? Where is God calling you to deploy the resources that he's entrusted to you? Or are you holding back? Are you sitting on it, hiding it, putting it in a hole? Are you maybe a little nervous that some other leader or somebody in church is going to find out about that talent God's given to you? And then they'll want you to deploy it, encourage you to do it. And no, I don't want to. Maybe I'm stepping on toes right there now. That word talent, from this parable, all the way back to the, and through English history, from this parable is why the word talent is now used for a natural or supernatural gift, a talent. Now we use it this way. What's God given you? An ability, a skill, resource. That's a talent. Entrusted by God to you, not owned by you, but owned by God to be utilized by you. So the story continues. Matthew chapter 25. What do we know about this? Not safety. What do we know about this master? Well, the master says in verse 26, "You wicked, lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I did not sow, and gather where I scattered no seed, put it in the bank." He didn't do that. Look down at verse 28 now. "Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And this is the way that Jesus has ended each parable in this set. Shocking that there is a divide here. Do you know the master? Do you know the bridegroom? Do you know the king or not? And does he know you? And are you walking with trust, even with abandon? Not living safely, but living wisely, boldly, courageously for him? Are you prepared with an eternal perspective, with your eyes on heaven, with your heart focused on heaven? Are you with readiness and preparedness, or are you focused on the temporal, now, safety for yourself, or preserving creature comforts for yourself? Are you living for your master by faith? Think of this as a church, too. As a church family, as Mayfair Bible Church, one local church family, God has entrusted to us amazing resources, and we need to ask ourselves, how are we using what God has entrusted to us for his glory, for his gospel's sake? I'm so thankful for men like Scott Young and Dean Rosencrantz and Andy and others on our board who are always thinking, how are we using the resources God has entrusted to us for good, for his glory? That's why we turn off all the lights when everybody's gone so we don't have a high electric bill, right? But more than that, open up the doors and use these facilities, use this property in any way possible to lead people to Jesus, to the message and mercy of Jesus. Creatively, think outside the box. How can we use what God has entrusted to us? Faithfulness isn't living safely, but boldly, courageously, wisely. Faithfulness is also not determined by the length of your life, but by the fruit of your life. Some live long, some live short, but how will we use the small window of time we have on earth? And so today, how do these three truths about God's resources work? Work faithfully with your hands with your heart focused on heaven. Your heart focused on heaven. And Jesus immediately goes into his return here again. He goes, you know, you're in the summer between the long delay, a long journey. This is how you live with your feet grounded on earth, but your heart focused on heaven. But I'm going to give you a glimpse now again of what it's going to look like. So he says in verse 31, but when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Those are the ones who know, who wait, who watch, who have believed in the word of the Master Jesus Christ for who he is. So we don't work for our salvation, but we work because we've received salvation. Don't misunderstand that. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8, it says, for by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not as a result of works, so that no one may boast. So we're saved by grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone. We're not saved by good works. But in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, it says this, the next verse, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand so that we would walk in them. And this is how we live in the journey right now. You getting this? Today, we work faithfully with our hands, with our heart focused on heaven. They're both together. This is what the wise servant, the faithful servant does. For the master who's overflowing with grace, the one who says, come, you who are blessed, who've received all the grace, outpouring of love and mercy, you're blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you before the foundation of the world. It belongs to you because you belong to me, and you're my family, you're my children, you're my servants. The church is bride. There was one little boy, grew up in California, and his name was Keith. This is a little picture of Keith when he was 11. When Keith was 11 years old, he was the youngest person by a long shot to ever sign a 5-year recording contract with a record label, Decca. He was on TV. He was winning awards all over Southern California. He was in plays and was on television commercials. And they thought of him as this rising star. And at that time in our nation's history, 50s and 60s, they were looking for these like teen heartthrobs, and they thought, oh, Keith is the next teen heartthrob, and he was inspired by the Beatles. And he was an amazing musician. His parents, his grandfather was an amazing musician also. And so by the time he was 11, he had written 40 original songs, started cutting records. But then there was this other person, another young boy who eclipsed Keith. His name was Donny Osmond. And Keith thought his musical career was over because this new teen heartthrob had eclipsed him. Keith wasn't raised in a Christian family. He had kind of Jewish roots, grew up sort of Jewish, but also his family would sometimes read the New Testament. And he said, in his own words, it was a convoluted mixture. And so as a teenager, Southern California, he skated off to try Eastern mysticism and various drugs, psychedelics, marijuana, the whole nine yards, to try to find himself. And at 19 years old, he heard the gospel clearly, and he responded, and he converted to faith in Jesus Christ and found Christ to be the answer. And immediately, he started writing songs, now overflowing with this, with Christian thought and biblical theology. And he and his soon-to-be wife, Melody, were working at that time as songwriters for CBS, writing for various shows and things. But they bought a home, and they started taking in people who needed Jesus. It could have been a drug addict, a prostitute, a homeless person. And then they ran out of space in their little house, and so they bought the house next to it. And they used that for unwed pregnant moms and homeless people and drug addicts and prostitutes, lead them to Jesus. And then they ran out of space there, so they started renting 5 more homes in the same neighborhood to open it up, to have space to lead people to Jesus. And Keith Green started writing lots of Christian songs. He was only 24, 25 years old when all this was rolling. His neighbors kind of got upset because at one point they had 75 people living in their little neighborhood on these homes. So they bought some property over in Texas, tried to have some more space for ministry. And Keith Green started writing lots of songs, songs you know, There is a Redeemer or Oh Lord, You're Beautiful. And lots of his songs really were pointed at, are you living faithfully for what Jesus has called you to do? What has God entrusted to you? Are you utilizing it for him? You have one short life to live. How are you going to live it? Safely or faithfully? Is the master going to call you lazy or even not in the family? Or faithful, good servant? So he went around the world sharing the message of Jesus Christ. At one point, he went into these poverty districts and other parts of Europe also where people were lost, so lost. No gospel message, no churches anywhere nearby. And he came back to the U.S. from that trip, sharing him and his wife about how Americans could get off the seat and maybe go on the mission field and bring the gospel to these dark regions in our world. He started having kids along the way, 26, 27 years old now, and he was one of the most well-known Christian songwriters in our nation at that time. You can still find his music, and sometimes now on Christian radio, you'll find a new artist overlaying some of his songs or even his voice on their song. That's been done dozens and dozens of times. There he is with 3 little kids and one on the way. And when he was 28 years old, they had this property in Lindale, Texas, and a missionary family came to see the property and a pilot who was involved in the ministry, and they decided to get on board this small airplane. And this missionary family of 6, Keith and his 2 older children and the pilot, 11 people in total, boarded the plane, and it crashed in takeoff, and all 11 died, and he was 28 years old. Like, 28. And he's still making an impact. Here's what Keith Green said: the only music minister to whom the Lord will say, "Well done, thy good and faithful servant," is the one whose life proves what their lyrics are saying, and to whom music is the least important part of their life. Glorifying the only worthy one has to be the most important goal. Faithfulness isn't determined by the length of your life, but by the fruit of your life. What are we doing with the resources God has entrusted to us? Would you close your eyes and bow your heads with me for a moment and think about this? Consider, how are you living, safely or courageously? Wisely, faithfully? And really, to the original audience here, to the Jews hearing this, they have the question ringing in their ears: will they believe it and live it? That is, this gospel of the kingdom, this Messiah, will they believe him and live his mission? And to us, it begins the same way. Will we believe and live in Jesus with radical abandon, immediately without hesitation, or sit out the mission? And the next move is, then what has God given to you? What will you do? What will we do with what God has entrusted to us today? Whether that's finances, education, experience, family, reputation, background, spiritual gifts, your time, your talents, your treasure, all of it entrusted, but not owned by us. Because it's our master's, and he is good. and he is coming again. So if you take a moment, and even if you're able to, let's just go to our knees as a sign of submission. This is what people would have done in the first century before a ruler, and just as an outward sign of submission, saying, I am yours, I belong to you, I'm owned by you, everything that I have and everything that I am is entrusted to me by you for your purposes. And just tell God what you are going to utilize, maybe what you've been holding back, what you're going to use now, utilize to not waste, but to serve him, because he's a good and gracious and loving God. O King, our Master, we long for the day when we will, by your grace, hear those words. And only by your grace, hear those words. Well done, good and faithful servant. We long to enter the joy of our Master, the eternal blessedness of heaven. Lord, as our feet are here on earth, focus our hearts on heaven. As we work with our hands and work with our heart, may our eyes be focused on eternity, to be lived for your glory in every ounce of our being, every minute of our lives, to the praise of your grace. In Jesus' matchless name.